United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
The UN, the United Nations, working in ways we may not be aware of. Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is the Seminary Explores, with our guest, Martin Hoff, who is the Senior Political Affairs Officer for the United Nations Electoral Assistance Division in New York City. Martin, have you been looking at American elections or observing, will you be observing the one to come in the year of 2018 in November?
Thanks very much, Jerry. No, we haven't, and we won't. But it's a very good question for me to start talking about my field, electoral assistance. Maybe before I do that, to add or to say, you mentioned that I'm the senior political affairs officer. There's more than one of me around, so I'm not that special. United Nations electoral assistance really works on the principle that we only provide support when requested by a member state or where there's a mandate from either our Security Council or General Assembly. After all, we are an organization established by sovereign nation states, and our work as a secretariat, as an international organization, is to support them. So we only get involved in elections when we've been invited or when we've been mandated to do so. In the case of the United States of America, we have not received such a request, so we will not be working there. You will not see the UN making comments or judgments about the elections or seeing UN officials at polling stations, except, of course, if they are American citizens casting their votes.
Mm-hmm. And it's not likely. We should put this in context, just to follow up a minute. The major industrial democracies of the world generally don't ask for observation of their election systems. Would you make a generalization that it's usually the younger democracies, those of just coming out of dictatorships, or those that haven't held elections or have switched systems, something like that?
It's a broad range, and you're right. The democracies that have been around for a longer time are not the ones who would normally ask us for assistance. What we see instead are countries coming out of conflict, mm-hmm. where a civil war has just been concluded, there's a peace agreement in place, and the country is trying to rebuild its democracy or a new form of government, or in countries that are already democracies where there's no sense of a deeper conflict, but where the capacity of the institutions might be relatively low and they're asking for international support. Maybe I'll pick up on one word, mm-hmm. if I may, Jerry. You mentioned the word observation. It's actually quite rare for the UN to be observing or supervising elections. I know that's a common perception, and it's quite understandable because this is something the organization used to do quite often in the 1980s.
Oh, yeah.
But that become quite rare these days. What we tend to do most of the time is what we call technical assistance, and that means that we're working directly with the national electoral authorities of a country, providing them with technical expertise, with assistance, sometimes logistical support, for example, in getting ballots or ballot boxes transported throughout the country, and with financial aid. And the big difference between the two forms, mm-hmm. assistance and observation, is that with assistance in what we normally do, we don't come out with a statement afterwards on whether the election was free or fair or not. We don't have an overall judgment on the quality of the process or on the legitimacy of the outcome.
Some organizations still do that because we read in the newspaper former President Carter has been involved in some, but that's not generally the UN's role. So what happens next? I'm a young democracy and I come to you and ask that you come in and give technical support. What happens next?
Well,
people are going to meet with my people.
I would love that to have that conversation with you, Jerry.
Was that easy?
What happens is we have established the United Nations is a large organization with different branches, different entities scattered throughout the world. And we've tried to create a sort of front door for all requests for member states. And that front door is in the department that I represent, the Department of Political Affairs. And so any request from a government would come to us. We would then take whatever is needed to assess the capacities of the country concerned, what their needs are, figure out whether we can add value, whether we can actually provide that expertise, and then also make a determination which branches or which parts of our very large organization would be best placed to do that. We also maintain in my office in New York a roster of experts. These are people from all over the globe who have worked in multiple countries as electoral advisors. And these are people we can draw on at relatively short notice. So we're able to deploy people relatively quickly when requested.
And the end result?
The end result varies, of course, from election to election. We are, at any time, we're involved in about 50, 55 countries where we're providing support. 55 is the number as we're speaking. And you can imagine with such a large number of country, of course, both the kind of assistance we're providing, the number of people we've deployed, the nature of the election, the intensity of the election will vary from country to country. In the easy cases, the elections go well, the results are accepted, and the country moves on to another electoral cycle. In the more difficult cases, you can see contestants, parties, candidates perhaps challenging the outcome, challenging the legitimacy of the process, questioning the electoral authorities. And these are real challenges that a member state face. And this is why we like to say that in addition to providing technical assistance, we also like to support member states in creating the necessary confidence, the trust that you need from your voters in the process so that the results are accepted, including by, of course, candidates who might lose the election, get defeated in that election, and then peacefully accept the outcome.
Describe this in terms of what's your day like then. Start with when you're in the field.
Okay.
And then if you want, go back to what's your day like in New York City. And I'm not talking about going to Broadway in your off time. I mean in the office.
I'm glad you made that clarification.
Yeah.
In the field. So it depends a little bit on one's background and expertise. I'll give a little example from my own. I'm a lawyer by training, and I've specialized over the years in helping member states design electoral systems. And that includes the mathematical formula, as it were, of how you translate votes into seats. It includes the design of temporary special measures for women, for example, or for minorities who have been traditionally excluded. So my daily work in a situation like that would involve spending quite a bit of time with either legislators, drafters on committees in the legislative branch of a country, or with members of the electoral authority, and walk them through the options that are out there, the kind of practices other countries have followed in designing an electoral system, in designing a quota mechanism, for example, for women. And trying to match as best as I can their political objectives, mm-hmm. what they want to get out of their electoral system, and then matching that up with technical solutions. And what's important for us, for me in that situation, but anytime the UN is involved in an advisory capacity, is we're not there to tell them what to do. We can give them a range of options and say, based on what your needs are, what you've told us your needs are, here are some ideas that you could follow. Other colleagues in my field could, for example, include experts in voter education, getting messages out to the voters. Here's how you vote. Here's where your polling station is. Here's where you register, if that's required under the country's laws. Here's what you do on polling day. Other colleagues with perhaps more technological background will work on helping developing software for the aggregation of results, for the calculation of, for the tabulation of the election results. There are other people, for example, who would work on strengthening the participation of women in an electoral process. I mentioned the quotas already. That's usually, of course, designed around getting candidates elected. But there's also an important aspect of getting women included as voters and as officials of the election authority. I just covered a couple of areas. But the day-to-day work will really involve sitting side by side with national electoral authorities. We always like to be co-located, as we call it, sitting in their offices so that we can build that relationship of trust, that we can really understand what they need in terms of their operations, and be the best possible advisors to them. In New York, things are a little bit different. And we have this jargon that anything that's not New York is the field. New York is headquarters for us. There, we deal more with the aspects that I mentioned earlier, receiving the requests from member states, trying to come up with a coordinated response to what they're asking for, deploying people, deploying experts, setting our internal policies and standardizing the way we do our work, and maintaining that electoral roster of experts that I mentioned.
Martin Hoff is our guest today. He is a senior political affairs officer for the United Nations Electoral Assistance Division, and you're listening to the Seminary Explorers. I'm your host, Jerry Christensen. The name is spelled M-A-A-R-T-E-N-H-A-L-F-F, and that indicates that you are Dutch by birth, perhaps?
Absolutely.
And but now, for 23 or more years, your home is in the United States, and English is maybe your first language by now. But at any rate, it shows that the United Nations is a United Nations, and it's not all English-speaking and not all Americans. You know, a question that comes to my mind right away, since it's an important issue that one thinks about before one even thinks about giving technical assistance to elections, is human rights. Do you, what is your role in that? Would you turn people down because they don't have the right policy or practices on human rights? Do you get involved in the question of the vote for women and so on?
Human rights play an important role, obviously, in our work. The right to vote and the right to stand for office are included among the international human rights obligations of member states. And two of our key documents that we base our work on are the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights for those member states who have signed up to it. And one thing we try to do in our advisory assistance role to member states is help member states meet their commitments under these two instruments. So we try to compare the legislation they have in place, their practices, and hold that up against their own international commitment and see how does that relate. I also mentioned the assessment that we do when we receive requests, and we would also look at the human rights situation in a country.
In that sense, when you have an egregious situation where there's been a dictatorship in power, or is now, or something related to that, and the situation is unfavorable to human rights, mm-hmm. Do you simply turn them down, or yes, call us later when things straighten up, or you try to. Of course, if there's going to be an election, then you want to apply those principles, because you're making the first step. If you're going to have an election, obviously, you'd continue to be a dictatorship if there weren't that. So I think I'm answering my own question.
But there is no easy answer to that question. We do tend to get involved in those countries that are in transition, that are making the change from perhaps a divided country, mm-hmm. country where there have been institutions, democratic institutions with limited capacity, to something that is more open. And indeed, as you said, the fact that there are holding elections is already a significant sign. But we don't make that an absolute requirement for providing assistance. I mean, if the institutions and the processes would be perfect, they wouldn't need our assistance to begin with. So we do look at overall at the human rights situation. We are aware of you know, what is going on in the country. But on the whole, we would look at these requests as an opportunity, perhaps, to help a country along on that path of democratization, and seeing their request to the United Nations as a good signal that they're willing to progress further.
How did you get involved in this in the first place, Martin? It's been 23 years, and my guess is that this is the major job that you've had besides going to professional school.
I think everybody I know in my field, my colleagues in the electoral field, I think almost everybody came into it by chance. There's no school for out there for becoming an electoral advisor or electoral official, although I do know of one or two master programs exist. In my own story, I was already working for the United Nations in Afghanistan. This was in 2003. I had a role as an in-house legal counsel, and the first UN elections team arrived to set up their operations and to provide advice to the first post-conflict elections and the first elections in decades in Afghanistan. And I volunteered. I offered my services. I said, I don't know anything about elections.
But you were a lawyer.
I'm a lawyer. Yeah. I can draft things for you.
I can do anything.
Lawyers can do anything. I can draft things for you. If you teach me, if you show me what you need, I can help you do that. And that was a success. It worked out. They had a need for a lawyer at that point. And somebody took the time to show me what was needed. Mm-hmm. That led to another job. I moved on to Liberia in 2005, where I worked as a legal advisor on the electoral team. And so gradually you build up your knowledge. And this is also really what counts, and I think what makes UN assistance in elections something that member states value. It's our comparative experience. It's having seen these processes work in different countries, under different circumstances, and being able to offer that comparative experience to member states to choose from. We like to say that there's no single model of democracy. And this is important in our work as well.
Without necessarily mentioning the names of any of the nations or governments, tell us a success story or two that's given you a great deal of satisfaction. When elections were held in places, you've already said Afghanistan, there's a long way to go, but there had been elections there, almost unbelievable, but they had held one. You don't need to name the nations if you're not allowed to do that. Latin America?
I wanted to bring up
Civil War countries.
An example I was personally involved in, where it was Nepal, where they held elections in 2008.
It's a monarchy, otherwise. Right?
It used to be.
It
used to be. It no longer is a monarchy, and this was a period of remarkable transition for the
right.
country,
yeah.
where there had been an internal civil conflict for quite some years, and in 2006, the different parties and the different groups involved in that conflict came to a peace agreement, which included a path to adopting a new constitution, figuring out a new political constellation and a new vision for the country, and moving on to something that was different from what they had experienced in the previous decades. The United Nations had been asked to provide assistance, and we had a small team of advisors working with the National Election Commission there. What was, to me, stood out as a success is that the results were accepted afterwards. This was a moment of...
That is the main thing, right? No matter how much you do, it's got to be
ultimately
accepted by use.
Absolutely. Ultimately, for us, the ultimate litmus test, the proof of that an election has gone well, is a peaceful acceptance of the results.
There used to be an old joke about the difference between democracies and those that are not democracies. And in democracies, the candidates run before the election. But that is a remarkable story, almost miraculous, isn't it? And I'm sure it's been repeated time and time again. How big is your department in New York City? How much does it? What resources does it take?
So in New York, it's a small team. We're 25 people, 25 officials. We cover the globe, as I mentioned, the 55 to 60 member states at any given time. The number of people working in the field outside of New York, the ones that are providing assistance, is far larger than that. I don't know how many are active in the field at the moment, but let me give you an example. On our roster of experts, we have approximately 800 names, 800 experts who are available in principle for assignments in the field.
We've been talking to Martin Hoff, who is a senior political affairs officer for the United Nations Electoral Assistance Division, and we've talked about the United Nations working in ways we may not be aware of. I certainly wasn't aware of this, and I'm grateful to him for filling us in. For the Seminary Explorers, I'm Jerry Christensen. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.